There's got to be an explanation to all these UFO sightings, right? Hey, it's Stephen Diener, host of the Unidentified Alien Podcast. And whether you're new to the conversation or have been looking into it for years, you need to check out the fastest growing alien show out there, the Unidentified Alien Podcast, or UAP for short. There's a crazy amount of alien encounter stories out there from all over the world. And the beauty of it is that I bring them all to you and let you decide what you believe. Download and subscribe to UAP on any of the major podcasting platforms. And you can also find it on UAPpodcast.com.
This episode is sponsored by Hollywood Casino at Charlestown Races in West Virginia. May's featured entertainment includes Jamie Lisso on the 18th and Randy Houser on the 31st. Also enjoy special race day and Mother's Day buffets in the Skyline Terrace. Details and reservations at HollywoodCasinoCharlestown.com. Must be 21 to enter the casino floor and attend a show. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Welcome to the newest episode of Beyond the Fame with Jason Fraley. I'm your host, Jason Fraley, picking the brains of the top filmmakers, musicians, and artists of our time. Comedian Lewis Black cracks up the Kennedy Center this Friday night with Goodbye Yeller Brick Road, the final tour. He joined me to preview the show as well as share memories of growing up in the DC area before gaining fame on The Daily Show and as the voice of anger in Pixar's Inside Out. Hey, Lewis Black. Hey, thanks for joining us on WTOP in your hometown of DC again.
Well, thank you.
I think we've spoken with you a couple times now, but this one is extra special because this one's called Goodbye Yeller Brick Road, the final tour. So I assume, does that mean this is the, is this like the farewell tour, man? Is this, you're hanging it up after this one?
Well, I mean, the thing that I can't seem to get across to anybody is I'm just not going to do 120 to 150 shows a year. I'm not going to be wandering around the country the way I did before. I will occasionally do a show. I might do a rant cast that I do. I might do that live. I might open for someone, but I'm just not going to be, going, okay, and here's the announcement of the next 50 dates. I want to write a little. I want to write either a book or a play or have a life.
Yeah. Well, Art, that's great to hear because all of our listeners and fans of yours, they're still going to see you doing all kinds of stuff, but just pulling back the reins a little on like the full tour date thing. Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to be, you're going to be able to see me. I'll be on The Daily Show.
Still going.
So that's kind of rolling along and I'll hopefully do some work down at the University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill where I went to school. Hopefully you'll get a chance to work with the students and, whatever comes up along the way. But I'm not retiring. And I'm not going to retire from shooting my mouth off.
Well, speaking of shooting, your title, you couldn't have predicted the political news of having it's an Elton John reference, Goodbye Yeller Brick Road and Wizard of Oz and all that. But what I'm going to say is you couldn't predict it, the yeller of old yeller, as in shooting a dog in the news.
Oh, yeah, no, that didn't even, thank you. I didn't even think of that. No, that's unbelievable.
I couldn't believe that news when I saw that.
I just don't understand why you would believe. I mean, I don't know who how many people you're appealing to by saying, and yeah, I shot my dog. But I actually had another special that I did called Old Yeller. So it was a reference to that, too.
Yeah, well, there you go. Yeah, which is the most heartbreaking, putting down the dog in that.
Yeah.
Damn. But all right. Well, other than that tangent, what else are we gonna? That was my tangent. But yeah, what do we talk about in this actual show here?
I'm kind of going through partly the fact that I don't know. So the one thing I'm trying to figure out as I'm going along is how do you satirize what's already satiric? Okay.
Right.
I mean, a lot of it's already there. My work is done. It's the newspaper is reading like if you read it, if you've read the headlines in a novel, you'd laugh.
Yeah, that's too good to be true. No, if that was scripted, we would have laughed. Like we would have said that's not possible.
Yeah, and it's a constant. I mean, and then I have to stand on stage now, so I kind of go through a litany of stuff that's going on. I mean, banning books is beyond belief, and there's a whole bunch of stuff in there that you know, it's like, I mean, there's simple joke, boy, they want to take the, these kids' books out of the library. Where's the best place to hide a book from a kid? Because you put it in the library. I mean, it's, come on.
Yeah, they'll never find it there.
Exactly. And then you've got the people who are banning the books call themselves, you know, a lot of the driving force is a group called Moms for Liberty. I mean, how am I supposed to make that funnier? I mean, that's like out of pocket.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Totally.
So, I mean, I'll talk about that. I talk about, this whole idea of somebody, you know, a governor of a state talking about wanting them to teach the benefits of slavery. And everybody moans during that. And I go, you know, you can't, what do you moan? Moan? It's one of the funniest things I've ever heard out of, how that even got out of his mouth. Why would you say it at all? And then how do you not know as the audience, the reason we know the benefits of slavery is funny is because there are no benefits. Okay, yeah. It's that simple. That's the joke.
Yeah, you're right. The world is completely upside down, my friend. Literally, we have a Supreme Court hearing arguments about whether the president has immunity to potentially even have them killed with no repercussions. Like, what the hell are we talking about?
Yeah, I know. And it's really, and he's sitting there in a courtroom. The first witness against him was named Pecker. Come on.
It writes itself.
Seriously, folks who are in the listening audience, come on. What can I add to that? If I thought of it, it would have been brilliant. I don't even have to think of it anymore.
You're right. It writes itself. The whole thing is beyond absurd. It's the old Seinfeld bizarro world now. Like it is. Like people need to. And trust me, I know we're a DC radio station. I know we have Republican listeners. We have Democratic listeners. But people, shake yourselves awake. This isn't the old partisan of what it used to be. Like, shake awake. Look what's going on. This is not normal right now.
No, this is way past normal. And you got. And they, and then they're screaming about inflation, and yet, and who causes inflation and whatever. Nobody, I would like everyone in Congress from now until Election Day to have this with one a day, two a day, whatever it takes to, if one comes in the morning, the other in the evening, and they have 10 minutes to explain what inflation is. And I guarantee you, not one of them can explain it. Not one of them.
Nope.
And because they're not even dealing with it. All they do is tell you that they're going to fix it, and yet nobody tells you how. Why don't you do that? Why don't you sit down and do that? Why don't you do what you're supposed to do? Build the prom float, okay, jackasses? Just build it and then show it to us.
Built the prom float. Well, that's a somewhat segue, prom float, to talking about. I wanted to tell about your DC roots. I'm sure there was a prom float somewhere when you coming up in Silver Spring.
Silver Spring, Maryland, Springbrook High School, and I was in charge of my junior prom. That'll give you an idea. I wanted to be in charge of the junior prom because I was going to raise the money at the junior prom and do that on the cheap, but charged for the tickets for that, so the senior prom people wouldn't have to pay for. There you go.
Nice. Well done.
And I should have run for office.
Exactly.
But it worked. We had a free senior prom. Then I spent a year at the University of Maryland and transferred to the University of North Carolina. I was lucky. It was a great time to grow up in that area. It really was.
Yeah, what was your favorite thing about growing? Because it's changed so much, I'm sure, over the years. But back then, what was the Silver Spring in D.C. and even College Park? Like, our listeners are from these areas. Like, but yeah, like any nostalgic pinings for?
Well, I mean, it was just as a kid, during the summer, you could walk down. I mean, I could walk. It was closer. It was near my elementary school. I could walk to the elementary school. Hello. And then I could, and during the summer, they had from 8 to 5 every day, a recreation program down at this, down near the, where you played softball and golf and all of these. I mean, it was just incredible, and it was free, and nobody called it childcare.
Yeah.
It was 8 hours being outside, and my mother didn't have to worry about me, and it was great. And we could, it was just a kind of, there was a middle class then. We don't have it anymore. The teachers that taught me got into the, partly because of the dedication that they had, but partly because they were paid a salary and knew that they were going to be, that they were essentially middle class. We don't even do that anymore. We don't even pay them enough to be middle class. I mean, and for all they scream about stuff, we got to develop a middle class again. I don't care what these idiots think.
That is the key to so much of this. There's no middle class anymore. You're so right. You're either really rich and the tax structures to benefit you, or you're super poor with student loan debt, can't buy a house, inflation. Like, it's, you're just stuck. You're either on one of the extremes now, and it really sucks. We need to get a middle class back.
But everybody in my neighborhood really was, you know, it was a middle class. It was kind of like out of, you know, it was a little bit later than, you know, like 5 years after World War II, they moved to a neighborhood out in the suburbs and they were building these homes and they were all designed to be affordable. I mean, it was a different time. There was no sense of trying to outdo your neighbor because everybody had the same stuff. And you didn't need Calvin Klein on your, you know, on the back of your pants to show that you were important. I know that that's changed. That's not, that was the reference, the first reference, folks. It's not, I realize there are other names there now. But the Calvin was the first, and it was unbelievable. I was like, so, oh, you got a pair of those jeans.
Yeah. Or if you're Back to the Future, you go back in time to this nostalgia we're talking about, and they call you Calvin Klein. It was written on your underwear.
I'm Bradley Trainer,
and I'm Don McClain. We have a podcast called Blinded by the Item.
A blind item is gossip about a celebrity with their name left out. It's a guessing game, and you can play along. The item might be like, this A-list star carries a Birkin bag worth more than the average person's house to the gym to work out.
Pretty sure that's J-Lo.
And P.S. the person behind all of this is Kris Jenner,
LLC. We drop a new episode every weekday so the fun never ends.
Blinded by the Item. Listen wherever you get podcasts and watch us on the Blinded by the Item YouTube channel.
So you went to you mentioned that you transferred from, you know, College Park to Chapel Hill, and originally, and then I guess you eventually went to, got your master's in drama at Yale. But did you I wanted to remind our folks that before you became the famously, you know, hilariously ranting comedian and all that, you wanted to be a playwright, right?
I did. I worked in for the what was essentially became the Roundhouse Theater. I was their playwright in residence for a year. They're out in Bethesda now, I think. And I spent 1 year, I spent a couple of years working with them, and 1 year as their playwright in residence. And I really spent, time here in New York. I ran a space with some friends, and we did one act plays below a restaurant. We had a bar. There was a bar and a stage downstairs, and it was essentially 100 seats. And we did shows. We did two new one acts a week. And it was great. It was as much fun and as fulfilling as it is being a stand-up. It was great.
So how did you pivot from this guy who loves Chekhov and Beckett and Pinter and Sam Shepard and all those people? Like, how did you pivot into doing stand-up? It was a little bit more of a, I don't want to say it was like a late in life transition, but it was a few years, like a second career kind of a thing.
Well, I was always kind of doing stand-up for fun and, just because it interested me, and it was a way I could write something and get it out there, because, you know, otherwise you send it to a theater, you can wait 2 years to get an answer. So it was a way to do it, and I was fascinated by it. And when I started working this club in New York, I'd been doing it. I did it in Washington at a place called the Brick Skeller originally, back in the early 70s. Then I, toward the end of the 70s, I started working in a place called the L. Brookman's, which was the first kind of comedy club in Washington. So I was doing it, and I was, you know, kind of not really dedicated to it. So I was I wasn't really as good as I should be. But once I started running in this room, people responded. I got more relaxed on stage. I found I finally found the persona that I wanted on stage, and people seemed to enjoy it. And there was more of a response to my comedy than there was to my playwriting. And so, and all of a sudden I realized at the age of about 40, I need to make a living. It wasn't going to come through playwriting, and it was coming through. I was getting by pretty well working in this room, and it was really great, but that we had some problems with, the higher up management who thought we were making a small fortune and threw us out for a while. So I kind of transitioned then, and I had a show done in Houston where things just at a what was the equivalent of like the Arena Stage down there, a really great regional theater. And things went so badly down there in terms of the theater and what they promised, and it didn't come through, that essentially I went across town. I found out I auditioned to come back and do some stand-up in Houston. They gave me, after a 15-minute audition, okay, I got a headlining slot. 6 weeks later, 6 weeks from the time I auditioned, I got the same pay that I got for writing a play that I put 2.5 years into, and it's a musical that I wrote with my friend Rusty McGee. And then finally, they put me up in a better hotel and gave me a car. So it was like, wait, what's wrong with this picture? And at that point, I said, drunks in a bar appreciate me more than all the work I put into the academic side.
And there you go. So, well, let's pivot towards the drunks in the bar.
Yeah, really.
Hey, before we go, we do. You mentioned it earlier, but I want to loop it back around to the Back in Black segments on The Daily Show. And so glad to have Jon Stewart back at least once a week now in this crazy time, too, on that show. I mean, Trevor Noah was great, too. But I love Jon Stewart was the one that that was like the voice of my generation, man. Like, it's crazy.
Right.
We all turned
exactly.
To him. But yeah, just talk about how that segment really just changed your career. I mean, it's probably what you would say. Wouldn't you say most people know you for? Maybe Inside Out now.
Well, now it depends. Some people know me from Inside Out and don't know I'm a comic. That always works, you know.
He's just an angry animated voice.
Yeah, they really and they saw me and accepted, and that was all they thought. I was an actor. I was really it was really huge because it put me Comedy Central ended up putting me in Dave Attell as kind of the face of Comedy Central. Yeah. And it really established both Dave and I as, got us out there and got us names. We ended up touring together. That was huge. Conan was big in terms of, getting me out there and showing my face. I did a ton of Conans. Mm-hmm. And so all those things came together. And at Comedy Central, I was doing, half hour specials for. And it all kind of ended up that momentum took me over the line into a whole different realm of reality for me. You know, it was really incredible. And being on The Daily Show was like having an advertisement, for yourself each week. So, I did The Daily Show and then get on a plane and fly across the country somewhere and go to a comedy club. And they'd just see me the night before on television. It was huge. Oh, that's changed now. We've moved into a more social media aspect. So, which I'm just not as equipped to deal with as I was. Television. Somebody, I'm not good at being my own cameraman.
Exactly. Well, I really appreciate you joining us. And final seconds, you want to tease Inside Out too? I mean, you're back as Anger. I don't think I've recovered from Bing Bong dying last time. Why'd you have to do that to me?
I know.
My heart out, my imaginary friend disappearing. Oh my God. But yeah, I want to tease because it comes out this summer, right? June. So tease it real quick.
Yeah, Inside Out 2 comes out. We open June 14th. They've already been doing these tests in front of people. Apparently the response is great. What I've seen, I just didn't know if they could, how you do this, because generally you do the second one, they go, oh, it's not as good as the first. They've got I think that the visuals are extraordinary because it's Pixar. They just get better and better and better. And the script itself is, they've added characters that are phenomenal. The new Envy and Anxiety are exceptional, and the new emotions and you've got your oldies and goodies. So I'm really looking forward to it. I have not seen it yet. I've just seen bits and pieces of it, but it's been impressive, and it's always a pleasure to work for them. And it's another step forward in terms of helping kids understand what emotions are. When I was a kid, I had no clue, none. That was another great thing about being born and raised at that time. Nobody cared about your emotions. Just, you know, sit on them and shut up.
Suck it up, Lewis, young Lewis Black in Montgomery County. Deal with it. Oh, that's great. Well, we can't wait for you to come back. Folks, it's called the Goodbye Yeller Brick Road, the final tour. It's going to be at Kennedy Center on May 3rd. And again, it's not, you're not done. It's not the final of you're going to see of Lewis Black, but this is the final big, huge tour if you want to come to Kennedy Center and check it out.
Yep. I really appreciate the time, and it's always nice to talk to the old neighborhood. So I'm looking forward to it. And I know it's not, you know, Washington, but I'm very happy with the Baltimore Orioles. So,
you're preaching to the. I'm actually an Orioles fan because the Nats weren't. It's funny, the Ravens for football weren't there when I was a kid, and neither were the Nats. So I was one of those DC football, Baltimore baseball guy. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of us that like never made the transition to Nats or Ravens.
It was the third time. If you're going to come, you can fool me twice. You're not bringing that team for the third time, and then you change it to the National League. Nope, sorry, bye.
Yeah, but baby, new ownership for the Orioles. Cal's a part of it now. What is it? Rubenstein was that the? Hey, he ran the Kennedy Center for many years. There's your tie to your show. There you go.
There we go. I knew we'd wrap it up.
Let's go O's, baby. Go O's.
You got it.
Thanks so much for listening to Beyond the Fame with Jason Fraley. Our theme music is Scott Buckley's Clarion. Remember to give us a 5-star rating if you like what you hear. We'll see you next time.